Welcome to Events That Made Me. This is the podcast where I uncover the moments that make people turn right or left. I'm Liz Taylor, and over the past few weeks, I've shared with you conversations with inspiring women who all have different stories, successes, failures, and challenges. I wanted to end this series with a woman who, through the worst of circumstances, has provided inspiration to so many, and I hope she'll inspire you too. She's the presenter and journalist, Jackie Bell Trowell. The first of Jackie's events was the sudden death of her mother in 1983, when she was only 18. I wanted to know why that was one of Jackie's events and how it would define her future.
It should have been a really exciting time for me personally because I was training for the Olympics and I'd taken a gap year. So I'd finished my A levels and I'd taken a gap year so I could just train and concentrate on qualifying for the Olympics at the World Championships and then hopefully making it, well, all the dogs are barking, making it to Los Angeles 1984. And I was away on a training camp one day. As I did most weekends, I was always with the national team. And I got called back to Coventry where we lived. And all I knew was that my mum was ill. Anyway, the national coach drove me home. And I remember walking into my house and it was full of people. And they were all crying. And it was just like a surreal scene. Like all my relatives were there. They were all crying their eyes out. Nobody would tell me what was going on. And then one of my mad aunties came running up and just said, Jackie, your mum's dead. And I was like, what? You cannot be telling the truth. What are you talking about? I only spoke to her yesterday. What are you on about? And she was. She was on the living room floor and she was dead. It was the most horrific thing.
Have you got siblings, Jackie?
Yeah, I've got two younger sisters and they were there at the time. My younger sister, Lorraine, had tried to revive my mum and give her CPR. And she was only 14 and a half at the time. So it was horrific. And she died of a sort of, I want to say an embolism, but I'm not even sure that's the correct medical term for what happened to her. One of her arteries burst and her body filled with blood. And that's how she died. And she was 42. And she didn't drink. She didn't smoke. She did a bit of exercise. She died in the October. Then I went to university in the following September. And I had to, in the meantime, try and qualify for the Olympics, compete for Great Britain numerous times because it was pre-Olympic year, so we were super, super busy. And in fact, I ended up competing for Great Britain 2 days after her funeral, which is basically a week after she died. I managed to persuade the coaches to allow me to bring my sisters with me, but it was awful. It was just an awful time. And it sort of defines the rest of your life because the person that you really want there on all your big moments isn't there. I think about it every single day, the things that I've missed out on because my mum wasn't here.
We all know you as a Sky Sports presenter. That's who Jackie Bell Trowell is to me or until I started investigating. But I've got to ask you, what on earth is a rhythmic gymnast? Because... that's what you represented, Britain. And I thought, what is it? What's a rhythmic gymnast? No.
Well, you compete on the mats on the 12-meter square, and it's with apparatus. It's with hand apparatus, like a ball or clubs or ribbon. You must have seen ribbon, right? It's really massive in Europe, especially in Russia. And at the time, they were Eastern Bloc countries. They were so good at it because they had full-time athletes before we ever were full-time. And it was the first year that it was in the Olympics. And of course, it's been in the Olympics ever since. Yeah, in fact, President Putin's girlfriend is a former world champion rhythmic gymnast.
So you competed, you did it, and you moved on. And then the next thing that tickled me was at 31, you get pregnant.
Yeah.
And my question to you was, you know, were you married at the time? And you said, no, I wasn't. So go on, tell us that story.
So I just met Eduardo, who is my now husband. And we hadn't been going out for very long, just a few months. And I was sort of desperate to find a husband, really, because all of my friends were settling down and they'd found someone to be with. And I'd had a long-term boyfriend all through university and for 3 years afterwards. And we sort of drifted apart and that ended. And I could never really find anyone else. And I just seemed to go through years and years and years of never being able to find a boyfriend. And I couldn't really understand what was wrong with me. And then I met Eduardo, and he was so unsuitable, I thought. You know, he was sweet. He was kind. He was generous. He was like none of the guys I'd dated. They'd all been, you know, bastards. And obviously, I seemed to quite like that because I kept going for the same sort of types. And he wasn't like that. He was very thoughtful, and he would leave me flowers, and he helped me move into my flat. And anyway, he ended up trying to buy a flat of his own, and it hadn't worked out because he's very bad at admin, as I found out later. So he moved in with me just for a few weeks, and we went on a snowboarding holiday. And I don't know what happened. I think when we got back, we were just so exhausted that we weren't very careful. And lo and behold, 1 month later, I'm pregnant. And it's just, how did that happen? Well, I know how it happened, and I knew when it had happened. But I wasn't ready for it. I was just getting, I started at Sky. My career was just taking off. I just started presenting. I was enjoying presenting. I was quite good at it. And, you know, I'd had to work really hard to get to that point. I mean, I've been working every day since I left uni, you know, just trying to build a career. And I didn't have any parents' money to rely on or anybody that was going to help me if I failed. So I had to succeed.
And how did you get into Sky, Jackie? How did you end up there?
Basically, back through gymnastics, I got myself into a sports marketing company. And I don't know, back in the day, going to the Olympics should have been a really big wow on my CV, but somehow people didn't really appreciate it. If you hadn't won a medal, no one seemed that fussed. So I just had, you know, I just worked my way up the ladder like anybody else. I got into sports marketing. I took a job in the press department at Sky Sports, being their publicist for Sky Sports. And I wrote the first press release for the Premier League. So when Sky got the rights to the Premier League and we had to write a press release, I had to write it. I shouldn't remember what the figure was that we paid, but it was something petty, like £317 million for a five-year deal or something. It was so cheap compared to football now. So anyway, I was working in the press office, and in the summer, they were very short of reporters because all the football reporters took their time off. And I was known to them as someone who commentated on gymnastics because they also owned Eurosport at the time. So, you know, I would quite often be commentating on the Rhythmic Gymnastics World Championships or the Olympics or whatever it was. So when they were really short of people to do Fishermania or the inline skating championships, they just said, oh, let's go and get Jackie out of the press office and see if she'll do it. And I did. So for about a year, I worked 7 days a week. And that's how I got into reporting and presenting. So when I got pregnant, it was really inconvenient. I mean, I'd only just met Eduardo. I didn't know how this relationship was going to go particularly. I knew I really liked him, but I, you know, we hadn't made this big commitment or anything. And I didn't know how I was going to be able to juggle being a mum and still making some progression in my career. And, you know, at the time, trying to be a sports presenter was, as a female, was really, really hard.
I was just going to say, you really were a woman in a man's world then. I mean, you know, it's very different now, but you've sort of shared that story quite nonchalantly in that, you know, well, I went into the press office and I got into here. But there, I think underneath this, A, there seems to have been quite a steely determination in that you were going to pave a way for yourself, which you have done so successfully. And also, you saw the opportunities. You must have seen the opportunities that were there for you. And your talents are very specific. And it's unusual in a woman, I think, to have those talents.
So, no, I didn't actually see many opportunities ahead of me. It was more like I had to fight for them and have quite sharp elbows. Honestly, you were knocked back at every turn. It was a very sexist industry. And, you know, so you really had to convince a lot of people that you were up to the job. But, you know, maybe I wasn't as good as some people because I'd never played football or whatever. when I was the only pit person in that office who'd actually been to an Olympics and actually competed and knew what it was like to take a penalty in front of hundreds of thousands of people, because believe me, it's not that easy to go into out into competition hall under competition circumstances and try and perform your best without feeling nervous and letting those nerves get in the way. So at least I knew how people felt when they were competing. No one else did. I think just in the end, perseverance, hard work, you had to be better than everyone else. And you had to work a lot harder than everyone else to get even a fraction of the recognition, you know? I mean, there were some incredibly lazy men. I'm not going to name names, but they never got told, oh, not love, by managers when you were trying to do a post-match interview, or, you know, just being treated in a way where they you knew that they didn't really respect you, or they didn't believe that you should be standing in front of them asking them football questions. But the ones with real class did treat you well. You know, Kevin Keegan, Alex Ferguson, Wenger, you know, all of the ones that you think would have class in that situation did.
The old ones are the best ones. You know who my guilty pleasure always was? Sven.
Oh, he was great as well.
He had a charisma when he looked at you. He just sort of looked right through you. And I did a breakfast with Sven, and he was my guilty pleasure. There have been a few since then, Jackie, but unsuccessfully. Are your children sporty?
Yes and no. So my eldest daughter was a pretty good tennis player, and then she just didn't like competing in the end, but she plays tennis very well, and she's obsessed with gymming now. So she's a real gym bunny. My middle child, we never thought was sporty, and turned into a very, very good runner. And my youngest child was the sportiest, the most competitive, the one that was most like me. And he's been a tennis player all his life, you know, training every day, and a great runner, you know, county runner and a county tennis player. And he's now at uni playing tennis for Durham Uni. So he's very sporty. I mean, I've always made them do something if they wanted a treat. So if they wanted crisps, I'd make them run around the field behind the house, or I'd make them go on a run with me, or I'd make them do something. I mean, they were never lazy children. They were always doing something. And I'm so pleased they're not gamers, because I know a lot of parents really struggle with their children sitting in front of a computer and not being able to move them off there. And my kids just never got that bug. I was kind of proud of that, really.
You must be. It must be quite a competitive dinner table when you all get together and have dinner, I would imagine. Yeah.
Well, they only ever say that. Mum always says she's right, and she. Well, that's because I am.
Yeah. All the women I've talked to in this series, just like Jackie, have had to make their name in a man's world, as have I. You might ask what it's like being a woman in a man's world. How do you make yourself stand out? Confidence, communication, and belief in yourself. One example was sitting round a table in Buckingham Palace for lunch with 16 men, having been told what I could and couldn't say. Me being me, I picked out what I couldn't say and obviously struck up a conversation with Prince Andrew, and I got invited back. For a woman to enable equal opportunities with men, it's about respect. It's about knowing your stuff. It's about experience. It's knowledge. It's sharing it. Whether be it sport, music, television, media, whatever the subject is, as long as you know what you're talking about, that's what makes you equal, not your gender. If you feel that you have to fight to be equal, then stick up for yourself. Speak out. Be honest. And in the words of Liz Taylor, take no shit. You've just heard how Jackie has made her name as a sportswoman and as a broadcaster. But on Christmas Eve 2013, she was dealt a curveball that no one, including her, saw coming. I wanted to know what happened.
On Christmas Eve, I was diagnosed with breast cancer for the first time. And it was not something I was expecting. I was kind of knew about it because my best friend was a breast cancer nurse, and she worked for a very top surgeon. And, you know, it was a conversation we'd often had. But, I mean, I always thought it was something that would happen to somebody else, not me. You know, you never think, oh, I'm really fit and healthy. I'm the thinnest of my friends because I'm the one that watches my weight the most, and I'm an ex-Olympic gymnast. Why would it be me? But then, you know, you pretty soon realise, why wouldn't it be me, really? And I found this tiny lump. I had it checked out and the result came on Christmas Eve. And the surgeon said, you know, you do need to come and get this result now. Why don't you wait till after Christmas? But once you know something's going on, you need to know, really. You'd rather know than not. And even though it ruined Christmas, and I never told the children, I just told my husband, and we just pretended that Christmas was normal and we were enjoying ourselves. But I was absolutely terrified. I mean, absolutely terrified. I was supposed to work on Boxing Day. I had a panic attack. I couldn't go in. And my sister said, just ring them and tell them what's going on. And you can't possibly go in, you know, the day after a diagnosis like that. It never occurred to me to ask for the day off, you know, but I did. And they were great. And we had to wait for the actual results of the biopsy after Christmas because the lab was closed. All I knew was that it was some kind of cancer. I didn't really know how bad, you know, what grade. You soon realize there are so many different types of breast cancer, completely varying in severity. So anyway, on the Monday after Christmas had gone, my husband and I went in to see the surgeon, and he said, look, it's very small. It's a grade 2. You could have a grade 3 or a grade 4, stage 4, rather. He said, it's very early. We can definitely deal with this. You know, don't worry. I know it's hard not to worry, but don't worry. If you're going to get breast cancer, this is the second best one to get. Because if you'd had stage 1, that would have been even better. But mine was a stage 2. So he said, we'll deal with it. Don't worry. We'll deal with it. And I think Eduardo and I just went skipping out of his office because it could have been so much worse. And with a grade 2, stage 2, you don't need chemotherapy. So I just went out the office thinking, well, this is a bit of a blow, but it's not the worst thing that's ever happened to me. My mum dying was the worst thing that ever happened to me. So, you know, I'll just deal with this. It'll be okay. Everything will be okay. And then we went skiing about a month after my mastectomy, and I wasn't allowed to ski because of my operation. And I had a phone call. They'd done some tests on the cancer, and they said, you know, this is quite a smart cancer. We really do advise you have chemotherapy. And that's what I was dreading, and the fact that I'm going to have chemotherapy and lose my hair and be knackered. And anyway, I was burst into tears and just went out and hired a snowboard and called Eduardo from the top of the mountain and said, I'm on a snowboard. You better come and get me. I've got to have chemotherapy. Anyway, it was very dramatic. And, you know, it needn't have been, because I did have the chemotherapy and my hair did fall out. But I took a bit of time off work and, you know, it was exhausting stuff. But I got through it, you know, I got through it. I walked the dogs every day. I did some really positive things. I was there for the children. We never talked about it at home. It was just some medicine I was having to take. We never really went on about it too much. I mean, it did affect the children a little bit. And my daughter was doing GCSEs and, you know, I think she used it as an excuse for doing badly in some of her subjects. When her teachers were trying to haul her over the gold, my mum's got breast cancer. My son got into a fight at school because a little boy said, your mum hasn't got cancer. I saw her at the school gate. She looked completely fine. Everyone knows that you die when you get breast cancer. So my son punched him in the face. I was just like, yeah, well done. So we, you know, there were a few issues with the kids, but I got through it. And in my mind, it was something that I dealt with and I would never have to deal with again. And it really changed me as a person. It made me a lot braver. It made me a lot more. People would ask me, will you do this? Will you do that? And previously I would have said no, because I wouldn't have had the confidence to do it. And now I just found myself saying yes to a lot of things and pushing myself out of my comfort zone and modeling bikinis and doing this for a charity or speaking out in public about my experiences and things I would never have done. I found myself just doing with a kind of a nonchalance that I suppose having cancer gave me a great deal of, I don't know, superpowers, confidence, you know, something I couldn't quite put my finger on that I gained from having that experience. And, you know, I was great for 7 years and I couldn't believe it when in lockdown I found another lump and it was on the same side as the breast I'd had removed and it was in my collarbone. And I was like, what the hell is that? And I just waited no time. I went straight to the surgeon, had it checked out. And he phoned me about 2 days later and said, this is quite aggressive. This is a grade 3. And I kind of didn't panic too much because he dealt with it before. I thought he'll deal with it again. You know, how bad can it be? And it never crossed my mind that it would be a stage four. It never crossed my mind that something so small could have gone all around my body, but it had. It never crossed my mind that I'd have something incurable, but I had. And it was absolutely the most terrifying thing I've ever heard when they said, you know, we'll try and control this for as long as we can, but curing it, well, that's a stretch. They never used the word stage four, my team. They never said it, but that's what it was, incurable breast cancer. And, you know, the survival rate from that is, I don't know, 25% survive 2 years, 3 years.
Jackie has received the news that no woman ever wants to hear. She's got no control over the outcome. So what do you do when you've been dealt a curveball like that? Listen to my Air Extension. It's available now, where I discuss how you can deal with the uncertainties of life. I'm so inspired by Jackie. She's already told me how she's been through so much, and I wanted to know how she copes with it.
I didn't cope with it very well at first. For 6 months, I really, really, really stressed a lot. I couldn't sleep. I was having to go to sleep with meditation music and, you know, angel heart music and things like that. And I was trying everything. I went to crystal healers. I went to oxygen therapy, which I still did. I actually went this morning to oxygen therapy because cancer doesn't like oxygen. I was trying to find a faith healer. I went to a specialist in supplements, and he gave me a massive range of supplements to take. Then I contacted someone who cured herself of cancer through off-label drugs. So that means drugs that are made for a different reason, like metformin is made for people with diabetes, but actually is quite good for breast cancer in stopping spread of it. So I was taking, I mean, I've got a list of about 30 things I take every day. But I wasn't really coping with it. And I was having chemo as well every week. So I had 12 rounds of chemo, and it was in lockdown. So a lot of the consults were done on my own. I couldn't bring anybody in with me. So, you know, when I got bad news midway through chemo that it wasn't working, I had to sort of receive that on my own. And my husband was sitting in the car, and then I have to go and tell him all again. And it was just a horrible time. So I ran Bowel Babe, you know, Deborah James, because she was the only one I knew that was kind of dancing her way through stage four cancer. It wasn't breast cancer, but her situation was the same. And I just said, well, how do you get your head around it? And she said, well, you don't. You just have to get used to this is your life. This is always going to be your life. You're always going to be in treatment. And, you know, you just have to deal with it as best you can, but you never really get your head around it. You just have to try and live your life. Otherwise, it's slipping by you, and you know, you've got stage four cancer. You don't know how long that life's going to be. And that's what I did. That's what I don't deal with the most, is that it's so unpredictable. What's going to happen next? Am I going to live for another year? Am I going to live for another 2 years? Am I going to live for another 10 years? I mean, I don't know. And my doctors don't know. Nobody knows. No one knows at all.
It's interesting because the difference is the one thing you do know is that you have a limited life expectancy. But none of us actually know how long we're going to live or what's going to happen to us.
People without breast cancer or any kind of cancer always say that. I could get run over by a bus tomorrow. But the statistics are very much weighted in your favour that you won't get run over by a bus tomorrow, whereas the statistics are very much not in my favour. That said, my consultant, she did introduce me to a 93-year-old woman who'd been diagnosed in 1975, and she was still going strong and she was still managing the whole thing. So she became my inspiration, and I had to chat with her actually. And she was great. She just said, don't look back, keep going forwards. You know, it'll keep popping up and they'll deal with it. You just have to believe they'll be able to give you some options. And so far, so good. You know, I've responded so well to a new tablet they've given me. And that's a year and 4 months ago now, and there's no sign of the cancer at all. So I've had a year and 4 months worth of scans where they can't see it at all. So,
and do you have things, I can't call it a bucket list because it's a frivolous word, but Has it made you think, well, actually, I'd like to do X, Y, and Z? Has it made you reassess your life?
Yeah, there's loads of things. There's loads of things that I want to do. I mean, my priority is really to, I want to move house and do up another house so that if anything happens, the whole family are in a sort of better financial position. We're not struggling by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it would be great to pay off all debts, all mortgages, like very quickly, which I wasn't expecting. And I'm currently looking for a real rundown project of a house to do. Although my husband's going, please can we not move again? I'm going, no, we've got to move.
How many houses have you lived in?
About five.
Oh God, Jackie.
Yeah. But I enjoy doing it. So, you know, it's my thing is doing up houses. So I need to be buying tiles and painting kitchens and things. So there's that. And I mean, I've never been to Australia. And I had so many Australian friends who lived here for 10 years and then went back. And I've never been. So I really, really, really have to try and go to Australia this year. That's definitely on my list. You just want to enjoy your life as it is. I like my life. I like working. I work weekends. I film in the week. I've got, you know, a lovely job, which goes at quite a nice, easy pace. I could do my treatments around it. You know, Sky had been really great about that.
Ruth and Eamon adore you. I know, because if ever your name came up in conversation, it was always, oh, Jackie, she's so lovely. You know, it was one of those.
That's not what Eamon says to me. He always says, oh, that Eduardo, my husband, he's a saint. How does he live with you?
Yeah, but I think that he actually thinks that about all men. Because, you know, he considers himself a saint to live with Ruth. And I tend to disagree. but Jackie, it's inspirational. And what I've found, maybe that's made me a little bit uncomfortable, is that you are so matter-of-fact about it. And this is not a criticism, but it makes one feel a little bit inadequate. Because it's like, you know, I wasn't sure how you would share the story, or indeed if you would share the story, but you are. It's like, it is what it is. You know, your family are obviously your priority, and you're getting on with the job. And so
you have to just crack on. You really just have to crack on. Otherwise, you'll spend the whole time feeling really sorry for yourself, and that doesn't really help you in any way, shape, or form. So, I mean, I do have days where I go, oh, bloody hell, shit, what the hell is going to happen here? But so far, I've been really, really lucky. I mean, I can't tell you how lucky I've been, because there's been people diagnosed after me in lockdown and they're dead already. Two friends, different cancers, but still cancer, you know, nevertheless. They're not here anymore. And that could easily have been me. But I got diagnosed in June 2020. And where are we now? November
22.
Yeah, which is a good, you know, it's a good amount of time. And I've got, you know, I've had clear scans for well over a year. So whatever I'm doing is working.
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, I work very closely with Marina Dalgleish. She has a breast cancer appeal and she has an annual event. And she's built a facility in Liverpool. I can't remember. It's called The Lark something. And we've raised millions and millions of pounds. She had breast cancer. She had a mastectomy, and it was something that she wanted to do. And it's probably everyone's fear, isn't it? You know, you go in the shower like this every night, and you're like, you're feeling your tits, seeing if you've got a lump or not, because we're all terrified of getting breast cancer. But Jackie, I just want to thank you for coming on, for sharing it. I'm now delighted I know what a rhythmic gymnast is, because I didn't at 10 o'clock this morning. I was very, very confused. And I wish you lots of luck. And I look forward, not to the Instagram pictures of you with a tube in your arm, but at the Sydney Opera House or some remote place in Australia, drinking wine and enjoying the scenery with your family. So thank you so, so, so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Liz. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. It's been a long time.
I'm inspired by Jackie because she's a mum. She's an athlete. She's a broadcaster. She's a news presenter. I mean, is there anything that she can't do? And I have no doubt that she will overcome her current challenge with the same determination that has driven her through her life since her mum passed away at the age of 18.
I hope you've enjoyed Jackie and everyone I've talked to on this series as much as I have. There's an air extension, my thoughts on the lessons we can learn from Jackie, available in your podcast feed now. Make sure you're following on Instagram at Liz Taylor Consultancy so we can stay in touch, and check out the website liz-taylor-consulting.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and see you in 2023.